Iranians.
Gisumisha Ahmadi for Iran.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You are listening to the program Bridge on Iran Radio with Sheikh Mahdi, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم الحمد و الثناء لله رب العالمین و الصلاة و السلام على اشرف الانبیاء و المرسلین حبیب قلوبنا و طبیب نفوسنا ابو القاسم المصطفى محمد و على آل بیت الطیبین الطاهرین المعصومین المکرمین Respected brothers and sisters السلام علیکم و رحمت الله Inshallah you're doing well and you're receiving this portion of the program Bridge, this session of it, in the best state of health and faith. Keep us in your du'as, wherever in this world you are, as we are in need of du'as for each other, as we have been instructed by Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. The question that we want to handle in this episode is that, can we imagine eternity? Is eternity... And is the hereafter even imaginable, right? Because Imam Sajjad in the 18th dua of Sahifa Sajjadiyah, is which was his supplication when perils were repelled or requests quickly granted. He's saying that, O Allah, وَأَخِرْ فَقَدِّمْ لِي مَا أَخَّرْتْ وَأَخِرْ عَنِّي مَا قَدَّمْتْ, then set before me what you have set behind, and set behind me what you have said before, pointing out to the hereafter. Why? For فَغَيْرُ كَثِيرًا مَا غَبَتُهُ الْفَنَاءُ, for that which ends in annihilation is not great, and for that which ends in subsistence is not little. وَصَلِّ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلِ مُحَمَّدٍ or وَعَلِهِ, in order for us to understand the fact that there is an eternity ahead. And the question is this: how can eternity be imagined when there is no extension and no movement? Right? Everything is in the stage of standing still. Everything stops moving. That is the eternity that we are facing. Let's take a quick break and inshallah we'll return back to this topic.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
All right, respected brothers and sisters, the question that we wanted to handle and try to possibly provide some thoughts on in accordance to the 18th dua of Sahifa Sajjadiyah is that even if we make determination and if we make the intention to start grasping and to start collecting information about the hereafter, would it be possible for us to get the ability and the power to make imagination about hereafter? Is that imaginable or it's not? Many people give up thinking about hereafter because they basically and they simply cannot imagine how hereafter would look like. Therefore, they come to the conclusion that unfortunately, which comes out of, which is not a sign of faith. In fact, it's a sign of the darkness of disbelief, that there does not exist an eternity. There does not exist a hereafter, right? And they start making up belief systems and making up ideologies that they will soon figure out that they're wrong. But in here, the question that we want to handle again is how can eternity be imagined when there's no extension and no movement? This is a dead end for the scientific system that would accept everything once they're visible, once they're tangible, once you can see something. That's what the science today does, right? If you want to experiment something, if you want to make a theory or try to support your hypothesis, you need data. And data is factual, and facts are whatever that is visible to you by any means, right? And here, When it comes to the hereafter, that's where the scientific system and a mind accustomed to physical calculations stops and fails. Isn't that interesting? Where the rules of physics are not effective anymore, and the rules and scientific system will no longer be applicable. If that weapon of science is taken away from you, all of a sudden you feel so helpless. Those who have relied only on science for the being of their life, there's no water and air, but there's life. How is that possible? There's no light, but there is seeing and visibility. There's no temporal extension, but eternity is an inseparable prerequisite of that world. A destiny that is neither comprehensible nor has any parallel or equivalent. We seek refuge in the pure essence of the one God from the moment when there is no helper except Allah, the Almighty. Let's take a quick break and inshallah we'll come back for a conclusion.
You are listening to the program Bridge on Iran Radio.
Our respected brothers and sisters, just wanted to conclude and wrap up by saying that this final phrase or statement of the dua emphasizes the limitations of human intellect and scientific understanding when contemplating the afterlife. And it posts essential questions, fundamental questions about how one can conceive of eternity, how can one imagine the eternity without extension or movement, highlighting that the laws of physics and our accustomed scientific paradigms become irrelevant in that realm. It presents a paradox, life without water and air, right? Seeing without light, eternity without temporal extension, and paints a picture of reality utterly different from our own understanding, beyond our current comprehension. And for that, we need to keep in mind that there is a need for a true belief system to be able to set our actions and deeds in accordance to, in the life of this dunya, to be able to achieve success in that hereafter that we have been promised that there exists. Inshallah, that day of judgment will be a day of our eternal victory. Inshallah. Keep us in your du'as and please spend time until inshallah next session contemplating on the ways that you can possibly or perhaps imagine how eternity and how hereafter it looks like. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bridge on Iran Radio with Sheikh Mahdi, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
The earth and the heavens begin to sing. The angels celebrate the birth of a king. A king who outshines the stars of the night. A beacon of hope. You guide us with your light.
Blessings of God upon you is my prayer. The earth and the heavens begin to sing. This day we celebrate the birth of a king.
Why there is a need for a government which will be established by the Wali of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
In one of the letters that he writes to Sheikh Mufid, he tells us one of the ways that we can end the ghiba.
Let us see how one can prepare for the advent of the zuhur of Imam Mahdi, Sahib al-Zaman.
This is Dialogue, an introduction to the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam al-Mahdi, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the history of Islam, Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Please stay tuned. The 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, is the one who brings hope to all of humanity. As the world is being grinded between the oppressors and tyrants of the age, we look towards the heavens so that the advent of the 12th divinely appointed Imam comes sooner. We raise our hands in prayers and we raise our hands in supplications, so that the awaited Savior of humanity comes and brings the final hope and salvation that humanity is so yearning for and desiring. The sights and the eyes of the world are looking towards the advent of this great Savior, Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, so that his eminence comes to establish the divine rule of the Almighty Allah for every single human being is completely dependent and needs this divine rule of the Almighty Allah. And it is this divine rule of the Almighty Allah, the kingdom of God that is to be established by Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, which will bring about ultimate justice in a world which is filled with cruelty and injustice.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Mahdi. May Allah hasten his reappearance. So, dear friends, we're going through this conversation and this dialogue that Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, has with an individual by the name of Muhammad ibn Abdullah. Now, Muhammad ibn Abdullah, he asks a series of questions, and we're kind of picking the most interesting questions, even all of them, even though all of them are interesting. There's this one question that Muhammad ibn Abdullah asks His Eminence Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, and that is that a man separates a part of his money with the intention of giving it to a brother in faith, a brother in iman, a fellow Muslim brother. But later on, that person learns that some people in his family are needful. And in such a situation, should the person pay the money to the former, which is the brother in faith, or to the latter, which is their family member? Now, it's interesting here that Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, he says that whoever is more religious should be given preference. But then he kind of adds a caveat. He says that as the scholar has said, and I'm not sure who this scholar is that is being referred to here. And even in a previous program, we talked about a scholar being mentioned by Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. And even in that program, we weren't really sure who that scholar was because the name has not been given in either one of these answers. But His Eminence says that the scholar has said, the Almighty Allah does not accept sadaqah, the giving of alms or this charity, until there remains some needy person in the family. Pay attention and distribute the money among the needy people in the family so that you obtain the merits of both. And so again, you know, as we have said, these are not certain jurisprudential commandments. You know, this is just one tradition, one question and answer session. And these are taken into consideration amongst the various other, you know, traditions and verses of the Holy Quran and the other Islamic sciences in order to come to jurisprudential conclusions. We are not giving jurisprudential edicts or fatwas, you know, here on the program. We're just kind of, you know, checking out these questions and the answers and, you know, taking out interesting points. Yes, from what we know, the family members that are needy should be taken care of before, you know, non-family members are taken care of. And, you know, ultimately, this is a system where if it is done all across the board, then nobody will remain poor. So if an individual focuses on their family and their immediate family and their near relatives in that sequential order in this circle, then the people in their circle start to become financially, you know, stronger. And then that other person who is poor, they should have a family member that is also helping them. And so these small circles, they grow and they increase the strength and the economic power of the Muslim Ummah in general. And it's a very orderly, you know, and very organized and orderly and disciplined manner of strengthening the economic status of the Muslims. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. IRIB English Radio, our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
The only thing that we can see is our well-being, our food, our job, our family, our children, their education, our education. That's it. The whole world could be at war. People are dying as they are right now. They're butchering people, burning them to death. All this is going on. People are being killed right here in the United States of America. being put in prison for no reason. People are not having meals in the state of Texas. I was given this. I don't know. I haven't been following up these statistics. I just know it's terrible. They were saying Northern Texas, one in every four family is lacking one meal a day. That's a pretty high rate. They're struggling to find one meal, one in every four family. This is injustice. You have people living it up, don't know what to do with all that they have and sucking it up from the entire world. And these people are having trouble right here in the United States of America with finding food for their children. Okay, and we're just sometimes absolutely fine with that. As long as I'm okay, I have my job, I have my food, I have my shelter, I'm paying my bills, it's fine. What is going to mobilize a believer is moving towards that God-given human soul of ours that sees beyond this body and its needs. It looks at others.
For listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Every nation has its treasures. For Iran, one of the greatest is poetry. It isn't just words on paper or verses recited in classrooms. It's the heartbeat of a culture, a force that has shaped identity for more than 1,000 years. And each year on the 18th of September, Iranians pause to honor that tradition. They call it the National Day of Poetry and Literature, a day that also marks the passing of Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Behjat Tabrizi, better known as Shahryar, one of the most beloved poets of modern Iran. This week, Iran Today will look at why poetry holds such a central place in the lives of Iranians, who Shahryar was, and how the echoes of Persian verse have carried across centuries and continents, from Ferdowsi's Shahnameh to Rumi's mysticism to Shahryar's voice in the 20th century. This is a story about words that refuse to fade, and a tradition that is as alive today as it was 1,000 years ago.
September 18, 1988, the day Iran lost Muhammad Hussein Behjat Tabrizi, better known for his pen name Shahryar, a poet whose verses were not only celebrated in literary circles, but embraced by ordinary people. That is why decades later, the day of his passing isn't just remembered, it's commemorated as Iran's National Day of Poetry and Literature. 1906, Shahryar's childhood was shaped by the turbulence of Iran's constitutional revolution. His family fled to the countryside for safety, and it was there in a humble village school that his education began. By his teenage years, he had moved to Tehran, enrolling at the prestigious Darul Funun, and later at the School of Medicine. But it was poetry, not medicine, that captured his heart. His first collection, Divan-e-Shahryar, published in 1931, drew praise from Iran's literary giants. His verses, full of elegance and imagery, were also deeply personal, marked by the heartbreak of a forbidden love that haunted him for years. Mr. Milad Irfanpour, a rising poet and the man heading Iran's Department of Literary Creation at the country's most influential cultural institution, the artistic sect of the Islamic Republic.
What made Shahryar remarkable was first his honesty. He was deeply sincere. His poems mirrored his soul. He wore no masks, and that authenticity gave them power. That's why his verses, whether to his mother, to Imam Ali, or to a beloved one, resonate so strongly.
The loss was devastating. In 1929, Shahryar walked away from medical school, never to return. Instead, he took a series of ordinary jobs in government offices, in the Ministry of Health, and finally as an accountant at the Bank of Agriculture. Much like T.S. Eliot in the West, Shahryar lived the life of a civil servant by day and a poet by night. But poetry wasn't his only art. He was a skilled calligrapher, penning his own copy of the Holy Quran. He played music, surrounded himself with musicians, and never lost his love for the tar and sitar. In 1953, after the death of his mother, Shahryar returned to his native Tabriz. He spent the rest of his life there, writing in both Persian and Azerbaijani Turkish, cementing his reputation as the most noted figure of Persian Romanticism. His influence on modern poets was immense. We also sat down with Mr. Hossein Ali Rahimi, a member of Iran's Academy of Persian Language and Literature, and the Saadi Foundation's representative in Tajikistan.
If one modern poet deserves a national day, Shahryar is the right choice. Among the moderns, he comes closest to our classical image of the Persian poet. Others, Niman, Farooq, Akhavan, were great innovators, but Shahryar embodied tradition. He lived simply, close to the people. His ode to Imam Ali reflected not only personal faith, but the culture's fabric. His loves were human loves, his flaws, human flaws. That closeness made him relatable.
Few poets have been able to bridge the gap between the academy and the street. Shahryar was one of them. His lines became the language of the people, spoken in bazaars, repeated in homes, and even turned into proverbs. One of his most beloved verses, "You came, my soul, at your feet, but why now?" still echoes in daily conversations, proof of a poet that lived not above his people, but among them. Shahryar's gift for poetry was clear from an early age. His lyrical verses earned him the admiration of masters like Arif Ghazvini, and over the years his work fell into three broad categories: religious poems, love poems, and tributes. But the truth is, in his hands, the lines between them often blurred. What set Shahryar apart was not just what he wrote, but how he wrote. He had a musician's ear, weaving rhythm and rhyme into his verses with a precision that made them irresponsible to composers and singers. One of his love poems, "Hala Chera," "Why So Late," became a classic after it was set to music by Ruhollah Khaliqi and sung by the legendary Ghulam Hussein Banan. But Shahryar was more than a romantic. He brought the ghazal, one of Persian poetry's most cherished forms, closer to everyday people. His use of colloquial language, slang, and rhythms of daily speech gave his work an intimacy and immediacy few could match. It was poetry that sounded almost like conversation, yet carried the weight of art. Over time, his work moved from love and nostalgia toward mysticism and faith. His poems in praise of Imam Ali, the first Shia Imam, became some of his most popular, recited with passion by readers across Iran. At the same time, he never abandoned his deep sense of national pride, filling his verses with imagery of Persepolis, Ferdowsi, and Iran's cultural heritage.
In general, works that endure have several features. First, they must connect with audiences linguistically. Second, their themes and values must matter to people. Third, the artistry must be of the highest level. Add to that the depth of worldview and cultural knowledge that great writers possess. Finally, when a work also carries personal passion, when it springs from the poet's own deepest attachments, it gains even more permanence. That's true of Shahriyar. His devotion to Imam Ali, for instance, wasn't just theological. It was heartfelt and emotional, resonating with generations of Iranians. And of course, he was steeped in the classics. He knew Hafez and the earlier masters intimately.
And then came Heydar Babaye Salam, his masterwork in Azerbaijani Turkish. Written in 1953, it was an ode to childhood, to a mountain near his hometown of Tabriz, and to the simple joys of rural life. In its lines, Shahriyar turned his mother tongue into a powerful literary language, filling it with proverbs, folklore, and memory. The poem quickly spread beyond Azerbaijan across the entire Turkic world, and today remains one of his most beloved works.
Lasting works share various traits: linguistic clarity, relevant themes, high artistry, depth of worldview, cultural knowledge, and above all, personal passion. Shahriyar had all of these. His devotion to Imam Ali was not just theological, but heartfelt, resonating with generations.
In our studio, Ismail Amini, well-known poet and satirist. He spoke about Shahriyar and why his fame reaches far beyond Iran's borders.
Shahriyar's appeal crosses borders. In Azerbaijan, I saw streets named after him, people speaking of him as one of their own. That kind of embrace shows how great art transcends nationality. When you listen to Tchaikovsky, it does not matter whether he is Russian. His music belongs to anyone who feels its beauty. In the same way, Shahriyar belongs to all who are moved by his poetry. Artists and thinkers spread beauty and wisdom across borders. Politicians, by contrast, too often spread violence and division. That is why poetry matters so deeply to us. It continues to offer connections where politics fail, and it keeps alive the cultural art we all share.
In the eyes of critics, Shahriyar became one of the last guardians of classical Persian poetry, a remarkable finale to a tradition that had stretched for centuries. To his peers, he was also the face of Persian romanticism, with verses full of lyricism, intensity, and sudden flashes of revelation. We also met Mr. Nasser Fayz, another leading poet and satirist.
Shahriyar, in my opinion,
in my view, Shahriyar is an important case, the representative of the last great generation of classical Persian poetry. His work carried freshness, yet he stands as the final major figure in that tradition. Remarkably, he was embraced by both Persian and Turkic-speaking audiences, reflecting his openness and lack of bias toward either language. That inclusiveness is part of his legacy.
Shahriyar's poems, whether in Persian or Azerbaijani, spoke to ordinary people. They were lyrical but accessible, modern but rooted in tradition. In Shahriyar, Iranians found a poet who could bridge worlds, the rural and the urban, the classical and the modern, the national and the regional.
Every great poet responds to life's questions not just in words, but in form. After the constitutional revolution, the question was whether classical verse would survive Nima Yushij's innovations. As you know, Nima created a new path, but Shahryar remained devoted to the Ghazal, often in dialogue with Hafez. At first, this seemed reactionary, yet Shahryar's subjects, daily life, social issues, even international politics, carried modernity within tradition. He once wrote a poetic letter to Einstein protesting the atomic bomb. Though his main forms were Ghazal and Ghasideh, one of his few modern poems is counted a masterpiece. He showed that innovation need not erase tradition. A century on, the Ghazal remains Persian poetry's strongest form.
In the summer of 1987, in the city of Tabriz, the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, sat down with one of the nation's most cherished poets. It was a rare meeting, a moment that bridged generations, during which Shahryar, the voice of Iran's modern poetic soul, recited his verses directly before him. Persian is more than a language. For centuries, it has been a thread binding together the patchwork of ethnicities and histories that make up Iran. Empires have come and gone, borders have shifted, but Persian has endured not just as a means of communication, but as a vessel of identity, carrying memory, emotion, and belonging across generations. For Mr. Amini, poetry is more than art. It's a force that unites Iranians across cultures and regions.
We are fortunate to live in a country vast in geography and rich in heritage. Iran is not a newly made state, but a civilization with a long cultural past. Even though we now hold only part of that original land, what remains is still great, and we take pride in it. Our country is large, diverse in climate, ethnicities, and languages. Amid this diversity, Persian became the common tongue. It does not belong to one group. It unites us all. And at its heart lies poetry. Prose has had many masters, but it is, generally speaking, limited to the educated. Poetry, accessible and memorable, has been embraced by everyone. That is why, no matter our background, Iranians feel kinship when a verse of Saadi or Attar is recited. Poetry has carried our cultural and intellectual identity. Where Italy has painting, Austria music, and India dance, Iran has had poetry as one of the main pillars of our unity.
Poetry across civilizations has always been more than just literature. It's philosophy set to rhythm, emotion distilled into language. It's the way humanity has expressed its highest joys and its deepest griefs. From Homer in Greece to Shakespeare in England to Tagore in India, poetry has been the vessel through which cultures preserve their wisdom, their memory, and their dreams. And in Iran, that truth has taken on a singular intensity. Here, poetry is not confined to the library or the classroom. It lives in daily speech, in proverbs passed from parent to child, in the verses recited at weddings, or whispered in moments of reflection. Few nations have produced such a continuous chain of great poets. Ferdowsi, who preserved the Persian language itself through the Shahnameh. Hafiz, whose ghazals still guide lovers and mystics alike. Saadi, whose wisdom adorns the entrance of the United Nations. Rumi, whose verses cross spiritual and linguistic borders. Omar Khayyam, whose quatrains wrestle with fate and the fleeting nature of life.
Persian poetry also matters abroad because it carries distilled wisdom, reflections on life and death, love and loss, justice and oppression, mortality and eternity. Our greatest poets were also sages, which is why many bore the title Hakim, Ferdowsi, Nizami, Khayyam, Nasir Khusro. Some were scientists or philosophers too, but all engaged great human questions in ways intelligible beyond our culture. That universality is Persian literature's genius.
This isn't history frozen in museums. In Iran, these poets are alive in conversation. Their words are coded in political speeches, sung in music, and inscribed on the walls of homes and gardens. Poetry has been Iran's conscience, its refuge, and its mirror. Persian is also the second language of the Islamic world and the cornerstone of Iranian civilization. From philosophy to mysticism, from history to art, it has left a footprint that extends far beyond Iran's borders. Even in distant lands, this language, lyrical, resilient, and profoundly human, continues to resonate.
In Iran, poetry is our foremost art. Why? Because we reached its highest peaks. Hafez, Sa'di, Rumi, Khayyam, giants translated worldwide, alive for centuries. Through poetry, Iran's culture and knowledge were expressed and passed on. To understand Iranian Islamic civilization, the richest sources are Persian poetry, where the language's beauty shines brightest.
For centuries, Persian was the language of power and culture across Central Asia, South Asia, and the Near East. It was spoken in royal courts, preserved in manuscripts, and carried along the trade routes of the Silk Road.
For centuries, poetry has been our most important medium of communication. The great messages of history were transmitted through verse. Kings depended on poets in their courts to articulate their vision and convey their words effectively. Even in times of crisis, poetry endured. Sa'di and Hafez wrote their immoral works in periods of immense hardship. This resilience has made poetry central to Iranian identity. In the global landscape, if poetry has a few great centers, Iran is certainly one of them. And Persian poetry is not limited to Iran itself. It flourishes in Afghanistan, Tajikistan, India, and Pakistan as well. In fact, India once had Persian as its cultural language, and great Persian poets such as Badil Dehlavi were born and lived there.
But the influence of Persian poetry has never been limited to the region. It has shaped world literature. Goethe in Germany admired Hafez. Emerson in America was moved by Persian verse. During the First World War, English soldiers carried with them the translated quatrains of Omar Khayyam, a reminder of beauty and fleeting life in the midst of the trenches. And today, Rumi stands among the best-selling poets in the English language.
Even today, one of the things that earns us recognition and respect in the world is precisely this literary heritage. Few cultures can claim not just one, but many globally celebrated poets. Think of Ferdowsi, Sa'di, Hafez, Rumi, Nizami. Germany is proud that Goethe admired Hafez. We can say with confidence that no other culture has so many poets ranked among the world's greatest. Even poets a step below that level, like Khayyam, are internationally renowned. Persian literature, especially its poetry, is truly one of our greatest treasures.
From east to west, Persian poetry has traveled as a messenger of beauty, spirituality, and wisdom. Persian is not just Iran's heritage. It's part of the world's collective memory, a bridge between east and west, past and present. In the end, Persian poetry isn't just art, it's identity. For over 1,000 years, great poets like Ferdowsi, Hafez, Sa'di, Rumi used words to shape not just literature, but culture itself. They celebrated beauty, thought morality, and captured the struggles and triumphs of the human spirit. That is why Persian literature remains as one of the world's richest cultural treasures, timeless, unbroken, still speaking to hearts today. Mr. Faiz underscored something else, the need to preserve Persian as the language that binds the nation together.
The danger to our language is not just foreign words. More subtle is when foreign patterns distort our discourse, forcing alien terms into Persian unnaturally. This is why institutions like the Office for the Preservation of the Persian Language matter. Language is not luxury, but a foundation of any nation with a millennia-old civilization.
Each September, when Iranians honor Shahryar, they are really doing something larger, reaffirming their bond with poetry itself. They are saying that verse still matters, that in an age of noise and distraction, carefully chosen words can still cut through and carry truth. And Milad Irfanpour explained how his department now honors those who find creative ways to promote Persian, with awards recognition and national attention.
The Parsi Jan Award honors the Persian language under the motto, "Our soul is Persian." It celebrates anyone, individuals, institutions, public or private, who serve Persian meaningfully. It could be unexpected, a restaurant with Persian creativity, a TV show, even a pilot reciting Ferdowsi at takeoff. I once experienced that and thanked the pilot because in an English-dominated space, he honored our heritage. The award will grant a major annual prize, smaller honors, and monthly recognitions. A council with advisors selects nominees.
Because in the end, poetry isn't just about rhyme or meter. It's about memory. It's about resistance. It's about hope. It's about holding onto what is most human in us.
من چند جایی رو گفتم زبان فارسی در دنیا بین چهار زبان کهن و پر اهمیت.
I've said this in many places. Persian is among the world's four great ancient languages. One of its key features is its stability. Over the last 1,000 years, it hasn't undergone radical upheaval. Its foundations are so strong that when we read Ferdowsi's poetry today, we can still understand it, at least at the surface level. That's extraordinary. Another mark of a great language is a rich, luminous literature, and Persian certainly has that. From Ferdowsi over 1,000 years ago to Hafez and Sa'di 7 centuries ago, down to more recent masters, Persian literature is overflowing with masterpieces on love, nature, praise of leaders, devotion to God and the Prophet and to the Imams of Shia Islam. This breadth shows the language's capacity to embrace all dimensions of human experience.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
You can talk it down, turn the other way. Fear the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears. It can reach you with no warning. Yeah, yeah. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may fear, but it's allowed. Are you listening? 'Cause I need forgiving. There's a part of me that won't understand, having sleepless nights with my head in my hands. I'm here and tears are falling, yeah.
need forgiving. Oh, I need forgiving. 'Cause I need forgiving. Oh, 'cause I need forgiving.
Salam and welcome, dear listeners from the capital city of Tehran. I'm coming to you with a vibrant lineup of programs designed to engage your mind and lift your spirit. Here on Iran Radio, we get familiar with interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is considered one of the most significant sources which gave rise to the development of Islamic art and architecture. Specifically, the so-called Quranic arts of calligraphy and illumination. The Holy Quran is divided into 30 equal parts. There are 114 chapters or surahs and 6,236 verses or ayahs, containing 99,464 words made up of 330,113 letters. The longest surah of the Quran is Al-Baqarah, with 286 verses, which is the second surah of the Quran, while the shortest surah is Al-Kawthar, with only 3 verses. For this hour, we start with For a Better Life, hosted by Ms. Nahid Ash'ari. This program has one noble aim, and that is to teach excellent practical ethics and morals, which can use in our lives from the point of view of Islam. In this program, we examine a range of practical and applied ethical and moral issues. Practical wisdom for daily living. Then we bring you Ulema's speech. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the Farsi and Arabic voices of well-known and reputable Islamic and Shia scholars and the authorities with English translation, a unique opportunity to learn from the masters. After this, we turn our attention to Israel Watch. Following that, we illuminate with the Lantern, hosted by Ms. Zainab Sadat Mousavi. This program expounds and explains moral teachings from an Islamic perspective through telling of fables and stories which are rich in morals. Then it's time to explore a fulfilling life with A to Z of life. Sister Zainab James will present an Islamic-Iranian lifestyle. This program presents an Islamic-Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, hadith, as well as inspirational poetry, parables, and stories. Coming up is For a Better Life. Don't go anywhere.
This For is a Better Life. For a Better Life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Breathe, I cannot draw to thank the friend, for I consider no thanks worthy of him. A gift from him is every hair upon my body, but how shall I thank him for every hair? Praise to the Lord, bestower of all, who made his servants to exist